The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Money.com, Kiplinger Personal Finance, and also Kiplinger.com. Our first article from Money.com, Dollar Scholar asks, when does it make sense to bank in person? When I was a kid, the Bank of America branch in my hometown was located next to a Burger King, an Einstein Brothers Bagels, and a Chili's. This was notable to Julia Young because any time my grandma had to stop by the bank while running errands, I got a snack. And lucky for me, she always had to stop by the bank. So imagine my disappointment when I grew up and realized frequent bank visits were not going to be a part of my everyday life. For several years now, most of my banking has been done on my iPhone. Nowhere near a brick-and-mortar branch or delicious fast-food restaurants, for that matter. Not only do I have to make my own snacks, but I also have lingering FOMO. Surely my grandma was getting something out of all those pit stops at the bank. I just don't know what. Are there any benefits to doing my banking in person? Let me start by explaining the landscape. It's a strange time for banks. Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation records show that in 2012, the U.S. had 82,965 bank branches. But by the time of the pandemic, which started in 2020, just 73,107 were still operating. The most recent data from 2023 puts the number of branches at 69,997. All those closures haven't gone unnoticed. The news is dominated by scary-sounding claims like, if current trends continue, physical bank branches could be extinct in the U.S. by 2024. But bank branches aren't dead, says Ismo Nelson, Managing Director for Research Fraud and Thought Leadership at BAI, a financial services nonprofit. They're just evolving. While digital is being used more with younger generations, branches are still very necessary, and not just for taking out cash, he tells me. Branches can be an excellent source for education or navigating the banking system for someone who may otherwise be unfamiliar and find it daunting. In other words, it's less about the buildings themselves and more about the people who work inside them. There are a slew of tasks financial newbies can accomplish with the help of a banker, like setting up their first checking account or applying for their first credit card. But the services offered go way beyond that, so even someone like me can benefit from visiting a branch. I may want to pick my banker's brain on the merits of opening a certificate of deposit or a money market account, Nelson says, or I can ask them how to budget or maintain a good credit score. Amid dubious TikTok life hacks and shady influencers, bankers are generally people I can trust to give solid advice, says Sean Nickhouse, head of consumer banking for Fifth Third Bank. Simply by walking into a branch, I know I'm getting expert, well-vetted guidance to help me reach my financial goals. Sure, I could seek that online, but people prefer to talk to people, especially when it comes to the intimate topic of money. Plus, it can be easier to navigate complex financial situations like planning out retirement savings, IRL, etc., says Aaron Levine, president of Preferred Banking for Bank of America. Clients want to come into our financial centers for a conversation about their finances, especially when it concerns a larger purchase like a car or home, or when they want to set up a savings plan for their child's college education, for example, he says. As evidenced by my grandma antidote, this is a generation trend for sure. A 2023 survey from the American Bankers Association shows the depth of those differences. While 60% of millennials born between 1981 and 1996 do most of their banking via mobile apps, the same is true of only 31% of baby boomers, those born between 1946 and 1964. Another 16% of boomers opt for in-person banking most often, compared to just 4% of millennials. Historically, clients would visit financial centers for daily transactions, depositing checks, moving money, paying bills. Today, clients more often are choosing to complete these activities via digital channels, Levine says. Our business has shifted from a transactional model to one based on relationship. Building relationships with folks of all ages is key for banks these days. In fact, Niehaus says Fifth Third has been redesigning its branches to feel more casual. Gone are the days of awkward teller windows and stiff chairs where I have to sit across a desk from a stuffy dude in a suit. Banks are now more focused on providing couches, big screen TVs, and coffee bars where I can hang out alongside a banker. It's about the vibes and about the idea that a long-term relationship with a specific banker at a specific place can benefit me as I progress through life. And while I have the privilege of preferring to bank on my phone, branch access can be crucial for folks in underserved communities. Low-income people are often forced to rely on alternative financial products that charge high fees and can trap them in debt. Even worse, these companies don't provide the kind of education that can help people become financially literate. Developing these relationships with a banker in a branch can really be the stepping stones for someone who is underbanked, Nelson says. Teaching people financial literacy can help them improve their credit scores, he adds, which is key to achieving financial stability. And the bottom line, physical bank branches can provide the opportunity for me to connect face-to-face with financial experts who can guide me as I hit various milestones. While it's certainly possible to accomplish this online, Niehaus sums it up succinctly. Having a personal touch matters. Sure, bankers can sell me stuff, but they can also offer me trustworthy financial advice. While they might not be able to point me to a nearby drive-through where I can get my snack fix the way my phone can, that's still a cool resource to have in my pocket. And from Kiplinger.com, how to put together your personal net worth statement. Now that tax season is over for most of us, it's the perfect time to organize your assets and liabilities to assess your financial wellness. A personal net worth statement lists your assets and liabilities and provides a clear picture of your financial health. It is a great tool for setting financial goals and can help show you where to focus, whether it is saving for retirement, building your investment portfolio, or coming up with a plan to pay off your liabilities. It will also help your loved ones immensely should anything unexpected happen, where they need to understand what you own and what you owe. You can use a spreadsheet or even a simple list to name your assets and the estimated value of each of the following: bank accounts, investment accounts, insurance policies, business interest, homes and vacation properties, charitable accounts, including donor-advised funds or trust, revocable and irrevocable trust, meaningful personal property such as car, jewelry, art, or antiques, and anything else of value. You should also document your liabilities and the outstanding balances, including credit cards, mortgages, loan, car loans, student loans, and medical bills or accounts. For every line item, we recommend including the account number, the balance, and other relevant information such as the name and contact information, or the advisor, broker, lender, etc. You will want to make sure at least one trusted person, such as a spouse or adult child, has access to your personal net worth statement and possibly even your computer or document storage system. Your personal net worth is calculated by subtracting your total liabilities from your total assets. Importantly, this is not a static number. It changes as market values fluctuate and as you acquire new assets or pay down debt. The next steps after creating your net worth statement. Once your net worth statement is complete, take a moment to reflect on what it reveals. You may find that your total net worth is higher or lower than you expected, or there may be areas where you need to improve. Either way, it's a great opportunity to set actionable financial goals for the rest of the year. Here are a few ideas on how to use your net worth statement to move forward. Set financial goals. Whether your goal is to save for retirement, reduce debt, or to save for a major purchase like a house or education, your net worth statement can help guide where to focus your attention. Invest for the future. If you have extra assets that are not working for you, example given, cash sitting in a low-interest savings account, you may want to consider diversifying your investment portfolio for long-term growth, such as contributing to your retirement accounts or exploring other investment opportunities. And review your insurance coverage. After reviewing your net worth, you may realize that you need more or different insurance coverage, whether for home or property, life or disability. If you have meaningful personal property, such as an art collection, fine jewelry, collector cars, or antiques, you should have those insured to protect these assets in case of unforeseen events. And estate planning. If you have not already done so, now is the time to start thinking about your estate plan. A net worth statement will help you to identify the size of your estate and what can be inherited by beneficiaries if you were to pass on. We will be covering estate planning in other articles as part of this series. And revisit your financial plan annually. Make it a habit to revisit your net worth statement and adjust your financial plan each year to ensure it reflects your evolving needs and goals. Life events like marriage, the birth of a child, career changes, or a move to a new home or state can affect your net worth and financial priorities. While putting together your personal net worth statement may feel like a chore, the benefits are significant. It allows you to have a better understanding of where you stand financially and provides the clarity needed to make informed decisions about your future. It also provides a foundation for your estate plan. As you accumulate assets over time, you need to make sure you are incorporating those into your wealth transfer strategy. In our next article, we will focus on why it's important to review the titling of your assets and any associated beneficiary designations so you can ensure that your assets are protected and transferred according to your wishes. And this article appeared in Kiplinger.com. Well, here's an interesting article, also appeared in Kiplinger.com. What to do with your tax refund? Six ways to bring growth. Use your tax refund to boost short-term or long-term financial goals by putting it one of these six places. If there's a tax refund check coming your way, maybe you've already received it. It's a great opportunity to give your financial future a little boost. Depending on your current situation, some uses of your tax refund might include paying down debt, filling in gaps in your insurance coverage, such as buying flood insurance or getting life insurance, or paying for a much-needed home repair. But if there's nothing you need to spend that extra money on right now, the best thing you can do with your tax refund is to put it to work earning a healthy return. From savings accounts that grow your money without cutting off access to funds to create ways to boost retirement savings, these are the six best places you can put that tax refund this year. First up is number one, open a high-yield savings account. Whether you're rebuilding your emergency fund or just want to save for a short-term goal without committing to a fixed term, a high-yield savings account is a great place to put your tax return. While the interest rate isn't guaranteed, you can find savings accounts earning as much as 4.5% right now. If those rates ever dip, you always have the option to move your money into another account or investment vehicle that better fits your goals. And number two, put it in a money market account. Money market accounts are an even more flexible way to earn interest on your cash than a high-yield savings account. While most offer similar high rates of return, a money market account acts more like a checking account. You'll get an ATM card and a checkbook, so you can spend money directly from that account. Unlike a checking account, there are usually limits on the number of withdrawals you can make in a month, typically around 6, but it varies from bank to bank. Often in-person or ATM withdrawals don't count towards that limit. This is a good option for paying certain recurring expenses since you can earn interest on the money before you spend it. For example, you can use your money market account to pay annual insurance premiums, make estimated tax payments, or even pay your mortgage and other bills. Just make sure you don't exceed the monthly transaction limit. And number three, hold it in a short-term CD. If you've got any big-ticket purchases planned in the next few months to a year, consider putting your refund into a short-term CD. With options ranging from as little as 1 month to up to 1 year, these are great tools for maximizing returns on money you know you'll need to spend in the near future. If you're planning a big trip to Italian wine country this fall, use your tax refund to open a 6-month CD now. If you know you need a new car sometime next year, open a 1-year CD to start building up a good down payment for it. This is also a good option for filers who got a refund this year but expect to owe the IRS next year. You can hang on to that refund in a short-term CD to let it earn some interest, and then put it towards your 2025 tax bill. And number four, stash it in a long-term CD. If your emergency fund is looking healthy and you don't have any specific big-ticket purchases you want to save for, park your extra cash in a longer-term CD. Opening one with a 3-year or 5-year term is a good way to lock into today's higher interest rates ahead of possible Fed rate cuts expected later this year. While it means committing to not touching that money for the next few years, it offers risk-free growth on money you don't have a concrete plan for yet. Plus, if you use your tax refund to open a long-term CD now, you can keep adding to it every tax season in the next few years to earn today's higher rates on any future tax returns. In the meantime, you'll have 3 to 5 years, depending on the term you committed to figure out the best way to use that growing nest egg. And number five, boost your retirement fund and lower next year's tax bill. There are ways you can put your tax refund towards retirement. The simplest is to open an IRA and put it in there. With a traditional IRA, you might be able to claim at least part of that IRA contribution as a tax deduction next year, depending on your situation. Your tax refund this year is not only boosting your retirement, but potentially lowering your tax obligation next year, meaning you might enjoy an even heftier refund to add to that IRA in 2026. A Roth IRA won't lower your tax obligation now, but you won't have to pay taxes on your earnings when you start making withdrawals in retirement. The second, more finicky option is to increase your total 401k plan contributions by the amount of your current tax refund. Then throw the refund in a high-yield savings account or money market account and use it to cover the gap in your paychecks throughout the year. While there are extra steps involved here, it's worthwhile if you aren't currently maxing out your employer matching contributions. It's also a good option for if your contributions are below the $23,500 maximum limit the IRS set for 2025. Again, you'll not only be adding more to your retirement fund, but also lowering your taxable income for next year. If you know you want to use this tax refund to pad your retirement, but you're not sure what route makes the most sense for you, consider finding a financial advisor. And last, number 6, have fun with investing. Are you crypto curious? Interested in REITs? If you've wanted to dabble in alternative investments such as those, or even just make a bet on some riskier stocks, toss some of your tax refund into an online brokerage account and have fun. That way you can try out new investments, investing your tax refund without exposing your retirement portfolio to the added risk. This is a good option if your retirement savings are on track and you don't have anything urgent to spend that extra money on. You can dip your toes into a new world of investing without risking more than the extra cash you got back from the IRS this year. Just note that the more alternative your alternative investments are, the harder it will be to find an online broker or trading platform that offers them. And here's an interesting article as we wrap up our episode today. It's a great way to save money. Strategies for shopping secondhand. We'll show you how to score the best discounts and avoid the pitfalls when you buy clothes, electronics, furniture, and more. This article by Emma Patch. Although secondhand shopping is nothing new, it has seen a resurgence in recent years thanks to a large part to the younger generation, particularly eco-conscious and thrifty millennials and Gen Zers. The rapid growth of online resale marketplaces has made it clear that for many, secondhand no longer equates to second best. A record number of shoppers bought the secondhand apparel in 2024, according to the 2025 Resale Market and Consumer Trend Report by ThredUp, a leading online apparel reseller. Nearly 60% of all consumers and nearly 70% of Gen Zers and millennials shopped for secondhand clothing last year. Buyers will find no shortage of choices in the used clothing market. The amount of all clothing in existence right now could dress the next 6 generations of humanity, with more than 100 billion pieces produced annually, according to research by Patrick James Grant, author of Less, Stop Buying So Much Rubbish, How Having Fewer, Better Things Can Make Us Happier. And from electronics to furniture, plenty of stuff besides clothing is being produced in abundance, too. Fortunately, resale markets provide consumers the opportunity to make use of the excess. We strive to keep our products out of the waste streams and in circulation, says Brittany Dickinson, Director of Sustainability at Goodwill Industries International. Goodwill recovers more than 4.3 billion pounds of used goods in 2024. In addition to extending the life of usable items and keeping them out of landfills, secondhand shopping can save you a lot of money. People who purchase thrifted items save more than $1,700 per year, or about $150 a month, according to a survey by CouponFollow.com. And given that tariffs may raise prices on clothing and some other consumer goods, buying used may be more attractive than ever. Consider the following strategies if you're interested in buying secondhand. You might just find that someone else's trash really is your treasure. Apparel. Thanks to the relentless cycle of new looks each season and the profusion of apparel the fashion industry produces, clothing and accessories are low-hanging fruit when it comes to secondhand shopping. You can find barely worn clothes and even new items with tags still attached for a fraction of their retail price. Shoppers have shown a thirst for fast fashion, inexpensive clothing that mass-market retailers produce rapidly in response to the latest trends. But interest in slow fashion, which encourages people to be more mindful of their clothing choices, is rising thanks to growing awareness of fashion's environmental and social impacts, increasing demand for sustainability options, and the emergence of new brands and initiatives focused on quality and durability. Crafty shoppers are also, quote, upcycling used clothing, increasing the value of a gently used item by mending, dyeing, or otherwise beautifying it or improving its functionality. Sometimes you may track down an item that you haven't been able to find new in your preferred size and color by checking out platforms such as eBay, Poshmark, or ThredUp. You may pay close to the original price if the item is new with tags and quantities are limited. But otherwise, you should see discounts of 50% or more off original retail prices, says Kelly Levinson, a seasoned secondhand shopper and owner of Forest Door Boutique based in Sandwich, New Hampshire. You'll often find the best deals at thrift stores such as Savers and Salvation Armies, although the pickings can be hit or miss. And this article also, due to time, we're going to have to edit it, but this article also discusses that secondhand shopping also works well with home furnishings and baby and children's items as well. Well, we are out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.